This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
There are major changes and developments to the social relief and distress grants. SASSA's executive manager for grants, Brendan van Vreede, not a stranger, of course, to Power 98.7, not a stranger to Power Perspective, will join us in a second or two to unpack these changes and said changes, I also want to say, and the planned increases if they, of course, do happen. This is after the Minister of Social Development, Lindiwe Zulu, published draft regulations around the special 350 COVID-19 social relief of distress grant, including relaxed rules around who can qualify. But of course, if it is a new regulation that it has moved up to, what's that figure, 650, then of course it's relaxed already. So, Pretoria, 14 July 2022, I'll just read you, the Minister of Social Development, Mrs. Lindiwe Zulu, has published draft regulations to amend some of the provisions for the social COVID-19 social relief of distress grant for the period 1 March 2022 to 31 March 2023. And let me bring Brendan into the conversation, SASSA Executive Manager for Grants. Brendan, welcome to Power 98.7 again. How are you?
Good evening, Denzel. I'm well, thanks, and good evening to your listeners as well.
Sure, Brendan. Well, it is published draft regulations, and I think the terminology would be draft, right?
Yes. So it's regulations that the minister put out for public comment. So that's the normal process before she publishes the final regulations to allow the public to give comments on the regulations, and once that process is completed, she considers all those comments and then makes the final decision in terms of what the final regulations will be.
Sure, and it's in the Government Gazette, and the proposed date for the regulations underpinning South Africa's Social Security Agency payments calling for public comments by July 29. July 29 is the number, right?
Yes, that's... Yeah, so that will close at the end of the month, and then she'll probably, about a week or so, depending how many comments come through, then publish a final set of regulations.
Sure. Brendan, just a question. When the latest, proposed amendments are made, even this is not the first time, because the minister has the right at various points to be able to act in a sense, right? In this particular way, when she sees that there is a need to make amendments and or things have changed, right?
Yes, she is empowered. So the principal act, which is passed by Parliament, then does delegate the powers for regulations to the minister.
Sure.
But so, there is those processes that, it's not just the minister can act unilaterally in a sense. So there are sort of additional requirements. For example, she must obtain the concurrence of the Minister of Finance, where there are financial implications. She must have public consultations and those kinds of things.
Sure, and in essence, for public comment, that suggests that even people who want to see the 350 increased would be able to make that also comment. Or is it just comment for and on the kind of amendments that have been made? I just want to understand that terminology. Is it open for comments to the public up until July 29 on the kind of amendments in the Government Gazette? Or, does it open the door to, all sorts of proposals?
So... That's a tricky one. So yes, the public obviously, and it happens all the time. The public would make comments on anything they feel should be considered. However, the lawmaker generally confines themselves to the subject at hand. So in most instances, not saying in all instances, so every comment will be reviewed, will be considered on its merits, but in most instances, the to get a final resolution on the matter, most of the lawmakers and the advice that you will probably get is to focus on the matter at hand and consider the other suggestions, which was not necessarily considered when she put it out as something that is that can go for a future amendment. Sure. If you sort of understand what I'm saying, because if she has to consider everything, if she put three clauses that she wants to change, right? If now there's some interesting comments and she now has 10 clauses she wants to change, that 10 she must put out for public comment again, because you know it wasn't part of the three she put out the first time. And so if she keeps doing that, you'll end up in a situation where the law, she'll never just make a change, because when she puts the second time out for comments, maybe there's others again that wants to do something else. Sure. So it's always, you know, let's put a cut off. Let's just deal with the issues that were put out, do that. And if there were some comments that we think are, you know, that really would make a difference and that's within the sort of budgets and affordability, then put it out, put that as a separate piece out again later on.
Sure.
It's just a practical way of dealing with it.
No, absolutely. Let's talk about the proposal of the 350 social grant, the SRD grant, to be paid to people now who earn less than 624 a month. What's the present and how does this make it different?
So the current threshold is actually equal to the value of the grant. So it was 350 rands. People earning less than 350 rands, that now increases, or at least the proposal is now to increase that to 624 rands, which is the value of the food poverty line.
Yes, the food poverty line.
Yeah.
Sure.
So essentially everyone living below the food poverty line and, you know, within that age groups and meet the other qualifying criteria should be able to then qualify for this grant.
Sure. And just to be clear, while people hear the figure of 624 a month, that's got nothing to do with the kind of money you get. The figure stays 350, right?
Yes, the actual grant amount that will be paid to you remains 350 rands a month.
Sure. Brinton, let's just go into the kind of historicals. People who have applied, haven't applied, you know, people who've just been, you know, either told, you know, that you're waiting and or you've been rejected. Various people in various kind of categories apply, and you get various responses, of course, back. And of course, there is an appeal mechanism as well that I just want to talk about a little separately, differently now, because I see there's a change in the appeal aspect as well, into where you would appeal, right? But
yes,
and you don't appeal straight to SASSA anymore. But let's leave that conversation in the areas of people who have applied and who are still suggesting that they haven't got their money and or now they qualify and they're struggling to convince SASSA that they actually, you know, are proper and needy, you know, of the grant, and you've been rejected once. What is the kind of, just to remind people of what needs to be done, so that even though you might be rejected, there is, of course, the continuing aspect of being assessed. So let's just speak of that aspect quickly.
Okay, so there's a couple of forms of rejection. So if you've been rejected on the basis of what they call, or what we call self-exclusion, in other words, we asked you a question like, do you earn more than 350 rands? That was the old threshold, right? So we asked you a question, are you working and are you earning more than 350 rands? And you said yes.
Sure.
Then you would have what we call self-excluded yourself. So in other words, you told us through the application form that, you know, you don't qualify for this grant. Now, that would be an outright rejection. If you then if you feel, okay, now I didn't read that question properly, I made a mistake in the way I answered it, you can then do one of two things. So we've opened the portal. If you go on our website, there's an option for you to change the answers to your questions. or you could just submit a new application form.
Sure.
And you know, just refill it out, and noting that you, at the end of it, you do click a button that says you declare that everything you say on the form is truthful and correct and stuff like that. So we do then urge people that do say they may not have answered all the questions correctly, do take a little bit of time and, you know, put a little bit of diligence in and make sure you fill out the form correctly. Because that could be one of the reasons. I think we got about 1 million people that just on the basis of what they told us, that, you know, they excluded themselves from the grant. Then the other ones are the other exclusions are the tests that we run. Now, those tests are run monthly. So if you, for example, have been excluded because you get a reason that, for example, says you have it's been found that you have means of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
That means either you've been found on a database that indicates that you have a job, or you've been found, or when we looked at your income in your bank account, you had income above the threshold, and the old threshold was 350.
Sure.
So, but that is run on a monthly basis. So as your income, so you may have gotten a little bit of income in that particular month, and that may have excluded you for that month. If that doesn't reflect again in the next month, then you would automatically qualify for the next month. So that is checks we run on a monthly basis against all the databases. Mm-hmm. If you were on a database and you were then off that database in the following month, it is then very likely that you could then re-qualify. Qualify for the months that you're not found on those databases.
Sure. And let's talk about the appeal aspect and when you appeal and how you appeal and to where you appeal and how often you can appeal, and if there are instances where you can't actually appeal, what is the appeal scenario now? Because like I pointed out, the appeal is now lodged directly with the appeals tribunal and no longer with SASA. If you just could explain that as well.
So that is now more aligned to the normal sort of social assistance or the social grants framework. During the state of disaster, SASA just used to do the appeals themselves, but that, you know, that was fine in under emergency conditions. But in sort of your normal democratic societies, your appeals always have to be independent. So, you know, SASA can't be player and referee in that sense. So the independent appeals tribunal that handles appeals for all our other grants is now also going to handle the appeals for this grant.
Sure.
So it's roughly the same process that you would have followed previously. The only thing that differs is the website where you lodge the appeal.
Yeah.
But it's the same process that you follow. And obviously the people who assess the appeal are completely independent of SASA. And they'll make their decisions independently of SASA.
Brendan, you might not have these kind of numbers in front of you, but I'm going to read them to you anyway because they make for really, really interesting reading. So it's from a statement that, of course, would have come from the minister and the department itself. So it says a total of 11.4 million people applied, of whom 43% are male and 57% female. So that is merely a breakdown of the stat between male and female. Caregivers of the child support grant beneficiaries account for 4 million of the applicants. Just on the caregiver aspect, just when is somebody a caregiver and when is somebody not a caregiver, so that people know?
So, a caregiver is someone who's getting a normal social grant, but not on behalf of themselves, but on behalf of a child. So if a person is getting a foster care grant, a care dependency grant, which is like a disability grant for a child, or a child support grant for a child, then they are caregivers. They're getting those child grants. They're the caregivers of the children for whom they're getting the child grants. They can then also apply for the 350 for themselves.
Sure. Okay. And the total number of, wait, I want to park that on for a second because I want to come to youth. Youth under the age of 35 years account for 60% of the applications.
Yes.
Wow, that's an astronomical stat. When you, but it tells you something, right, about what's going on in the country. 60% of the total number of applications, and that would be from the 11.4 million, right?
Yes.
Would be youth.
Yes, so that correlates actually to the unemployment rate amongst youth. We know the unemployment rate amongst youth is the highest. So even though it averages at about 30-odd%, it is in the upper 50% amongst the youth. What's even more worrying is of that 11 million applicants, about 500,000 are people with tertiary education.
Yes, and that's about 5% of the stat, and I'm looking at that stat as well, and I was about to come and say that to you as well. 40% of the applicants have a grade 12 qualification, 5% have a tertiary education. Those are people with degrees who've taken the time to go to university and who are sitting and applying for a 350 rand, grant.
And of that 5%, half of that, about 2.5%, has said that since they got their degrees, they have never worked. They just some may have worked for 3 months or so, but some are just like never had any job.
That's depressing, but it tells you. I mean, it's not something that's the department has anything to do with in essence, but it's a worrying stat in the sense that, you know, it tells you where the country is at when 5% have a tertiary education, and you say that half of that, because obviously as people fill in those forms, they will tell you various details of their lives, right?
Yeah.
Tell me something, and that's something I just wanted to just talk to now, Brendan. Is there a way of utilizing the kind of information that you're getting in a broader social context and formulation other than just using them for the grant application format? Is there a way? Because the kind of stats you've also just given me now, I think is absolutely key when you begin to look at, you know, a country and how you dissect it in its various spaces.
Yes. So we do share those stats with, sure, with a range of other. Sorry, my pets are just bugging me. We do share those stats with a range of other government departments, including the presidency, the treasury,
sure,
Department of Labor, and so forth. For the moment, I could probably at most say many of them are brainstorming around this. There are some plans and thoughts about, especially as the build-up to next year's budget, for example. I know the Treasury, together with the Presidency, is working on a sort of like an expanded, the President's Employment Stimulus Package, looking at expanding that and targeting that more to youth and so forth. So I do suspect that some of there may be some further initiatives in that space. From the department and the agency side, we also, we don't do the job creation part, but we are, very able and capable of sharing data. And we put it as a clause in the application forms as well, that if you apply for this grant, you must be sort of willing to accept work. So that enables us then, and you must be willing for us to share your data,
sure,
with people that are offering work.
Sure.
That then whatever initiatives these other departments then develop and come up with, we are then in that position to say, well, we've got this database of 11 million people that says they want work. Here they are, here's their stats, here's the locations, here's their contact details and so forth. There's nothing specifically built around that at the moment, but there is some thinking around what can be done to try and make those connections a little bit easier. But the big challenge is you've got to first create the jobs.
Absolutely, absolutely. Brenton, the last one on this, the total number of non-citizens who applied is 21,207, and the majority are special permit holders from Lesotho at 15,882, followed by asylum seekers at 2,133 and special permit holders from Zimbabwe and Angola at 1,613 and 1,579 respectively. So that's the impact that non-citizens have on the grant as well. Explain that to somebody who might not understand why non-citizens, and I'm using that particular language because it's used in the kind of detail that's applied, and why yes. why they are also applicable here.
Okay, so I think that is probably one of the areas from the COVID grant that is a little bit progressive. So let's first define non-citizens. It's not necessarily economic migrants.
Yes.
That most people will probably, their first mind thoughts will be going there. These are refugees and asylum seekers. So these are people that have actually been granted safe haven in our country. Now, our country's policy towards refugees and asylum seekers is that we don't put them in camps like yeah. many other countries do. We integrate them into society, which means they should have access to the same benefits every citizen of your country has. So healthcare, education, the right to work, and social grants if they need it.
Yeah.
And you'll see the numbers are very small. If we talk instead of millions there, you're talking of tens of thousands.
Yeah, sure.
So it's a very, very small number. That do have that refugee and asylum seeker status. When I say this was progressive, it's because for the 350, we provide both for refugees and asylum seekers, whereas for the normal grants, we only provide for refugees, those who have gone through the full process and eventually got declared as a refugee. Now, the 350, we had a court order against us saying that, you know, we can't, an asylum seeker is essentially a refugee in transit. You know, the person is most likely going to end up getting the refugee status. And because it takes sometimes, I don't want to speak about another department, but, you know, sometimes takes a bit longer than it should to have your asylum seeker status. Your refugee status verified. So you're sometimes asylum seeker for very long. And hence that court judgment was that it would be administratively unfair just to say no, just because you're asylum seeker, you're not yet a refugee, you can't qualify for social assistance or any other government benefit, as a matter of fact.
Brinton, just for an understanding, and when I read all of this, right? Help me with this. The department, it should be noted that the maximum allowable income was set at 350, right? Which was meant that every applicant who was found to have received an income exceeding 350 in their bank's account would be excluded. Following the implementation of the new regulations, including the checking of the applicant's bank accounts against the threshold of 350, the department is concerned about the low number of approvals. Out of the 11.4 million applicants for the month of June, only 5.2 million beneficiaries were applied. Is that because the essence of the bank account was one of the key elements where you would actually check and balance things? And that found to be, you know, one of the main determining factors why people were not receiving either the grant is because when you checked the bank balance, it would have been at that. And I say that in essence because would that have been one of the key elements, the bank balance aspect of the determination?
It was quite we do have quite a lot of people that got excluded as a result of the bank balance. But we also saw that the applications were much lower than what it was in the previous round. In the previous round, we almost touched 16 million applications, whereas now in the first sort of 2 months, we've only reached 11 million applications. So we're also thinking that because the threshold may have been that low, people are just saying, well, okay, I know I've got more money than that coming into my account.
I might be unemployed and I might not have an income, but I have more money in my bank than that, so I'm not going to apply.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's partly so. We can't say 100% accurately that is the main reason, but, you know, that's that's what we're suspecting is happening. And obviously, as I, you know, when I came on the, for the first time, I said, we're kind of shooting in the dark. And we're testing these things at different levels. Even when we tested the 350, we were worried that that might be too high, because from stats data, you know, the stats data suggests that there are 13 million people with zero income.
Yeah.
So we thought, well, okay, but, you know, we're taking a bit of a risk there. But now that we're actually getting the administrative data from the banks, we see that's actually a lot of people that do have income, more than zero.
Sure.
Or at least more than 350. So we're pushing that now, saying to the food poverty line. Now, the food poverty line stats data says 18 million people. But, you know, just from what we've got, the experience we got on the 350 threshold, we don't think we're going to go anywhere close to 18 million. We're probably going to, we're hoping we can reach the 10 million at least.
Mm. Brinton, let's just take one caller before I let you go. Thlengani in Pretoria?
Evening, Denzel.
Sure, Thlengani.
I find it strange because my younger brother was rejected. The reason given was there is money coming in his account almost every month.
Sure.
Of course, sometimes I deposit money in his account because I cannot leave him to die.
Yeah.
So I find it very, very weird because he is not working, but I sometimes deposit money in his account for toiletries and stuff like that.
Mm.
Yes, rejected because they said there is money coming in your account.
Okay. And I think Brenton would be able to talk to that and how he would be able then to maybe just, you know, circumvent what's going on. But Thlengani, thanks for the call. Let's hear what Brenton says. Brenton, I think it's a typical kind of example of what you would have, where families begin to look after each other, the person unemployed as they would be, the person possibly, you know, qualifies for the grant. The only aspect here is that the family have come, and one particular family member who can afford to support another family member is supporting that individual, and that excludes them from the grant.
Yes, so now that is a consequence of the system, the way it's designed. So that would be a sort of an exclusion factor, that even if you were getting support from your family, you would be excluded from the grant. That's a design. A design factor, because there's no way for us to determine that this money was coming from income.
All you see is the said amount.
We do think, though, that the raising of the threshold at least, yes, many people would support their family members, probably more than 350 a month.
Sure.
But maybe not more than the 624 a month. And So that would bring more people in. Those who still get much more support than that from their family would still be excluded. But depending on how many people come in at the 624 mark, if we're not yet at 10 million people, we could then, or not us, the department could then maybe think of raising it to even maybe 1,000 rands. But again, it's hard to sort of predict that. So I'm not saying people are circumvented by just, you know, supporting their family just below the threshold. But you know, obviously, if you can support your family, it's best. You know, it's good that you do provide that support to your family, even if it means that for a little while they don't get the grant. And when you can't provide that support to them, they will be able to get the grant. But if your support is below the level of the threshold, then they should be able to get your support and the grant.
Sure. I was just thinking as you were saying that as well, you know, you don't want to tell somebody what to do, but there's also the alternatives of you know, other means of paying individuals these days with cell phones and all sorts of other things that I don't think a bank account would necessarily come into play there. My one of the last questions for you then, is there still a delay in assessing April and May applications?
So remember we started with the June, and then we said in July we're going to do the July file with the April. So we've done the April, and we now commence, and so I think this week we'll probably complete the July. So in July,
we would have completed April and July, and then, as we said, we will do May in August with August.
Sure. Brenton van Vrede, thank you so much. Always a pleasure talking to you, mate. SASSA's executive manager for grants. I know it's this late hour as well, but you make the time. Hold on, Brenton. Before I let you go, somebody has just come on, and I see them here, and I really don't want to let you go. And then the person, you know, comes on and says, "I just missed him." So I'm going to wait for the individual to come on. And Lebogang.
Hello, how are you, Desmond?
I'm good, Lebogang. How are you, Chief?
I'm good.
Sharp, man. Explain your scenario.
I did my internship with Gauteng Department of Education.
You did your internship with the Department of Education in Gauteng?
Yes. Sharp. Yeah, first time when the president announced, I applied, and then I was rejected. It said, I'm on a government payroll.
Okay.
And then now, when I apply, is telling me that I've got another source of income. So then, to me, this system is meant to keep people out of, not to get this thing, this money. Because it's impractical to have a bank account that nothing comes in at all. And for that account, for a bank to actually hold on to that account while there's no activity. So it's very impractical for SASSA to expect the beneficiaries to really have zero bank balance.
Lebogang, you see, I think what Brendan is also saying, and he'll speak to it, but the way I understand it is that it's the means test is for people who really, really are at the bottom rank. And if they see that you do have some form of income, they really want to help those with absolutely nobody. So if they see that you do have some income, some flows into a formal banking system, then they do assume that you do have some sort of income that is being generated. And that then they determine what that particular figure would be. My question would be, before I go to Brendan, would be, do you have some form of income coming in that is beyond the 350 and or could be beyond the number of 624 that it could be raised to?
Yeah, actually, my younger brother sends money from my mom from where he works now through my account. So I'm handling those particular things. But that is not my money. So, and then again, I fail to understand why SASSA I even question the statistics, unemployment statistics, because this money is meant to relieve people who are unemployed. So if the state SA will say that we have so much percentage of people not working, and then SASSA is busy shooting on the dark, not knowing exactly who are the people who are not working. So for me, I think... we are in trouble in South Africa.
Sure, Lebogang. Let me go to Brenton. Brenton, you've got the final remarks, Brenton. Before I let you go,
I actually want to say, Denzel, you've answered that one perfectly. I probably don't have to come onto your show anymore.
You know, I'm a good student.
But I'm also regretting making that comment that we were shooting in the dark, because Lebogang is going to hold me accountable for that.
You said beam shooting in the dark.
Yeah. But, so that's the challenge, Lebogang, is that, you know, we don't have the capability to assess people on an individual basis. We don't have the ability to call you into an office, sit you down, look at your bank statements, ask you a few questions, you tell us, and then, you know, we make a decision based on that. This grant is really some, you know, emergency relief for those that are most destitute, who we can clearly pick up from like you said, the data and the statistics that have absolutely no income, no support, no help. And it can only be done digitally. That is unfortunately the circumstance we have. I think I mentioned it the first time when I was on your show, Denzel, that, you know, our normal grants, we have 12 million people
And we have a budget of about 8 billion rands and the machinery that is used to support that 12 million people. Mm. For this grant, we've got no money administratively. And it purely digitally with about 20 people in the back office. And so, the capability at this stage is just not there for that individual personalized assessment that Lebogang is sort of asking for. But we see this as a progressive realization to what many civil society organizations are calling for, a basic income grant and that. But that infrastructure needs to be built. The normal grants we have took us 20 years to build and get to 12 million. This grant we got to 10 million in a matter of months.
Sure.
And so we see that as sort of a big step forward, but we do know that extra mile needs to still be going. We still have to do that extra mile in the future to get more people and a lot of people that are sort of falling on the margins, which are harder to reach through the digital systems, because the digital systems will just exclude them because they're having, a lot of these things are,
Sure.
Income is quite complicated. It's not as simple as the digital systems.
Brenton, hold on, Brenton. I knew this was going to create something, but Jack just wants it explained, and I'm going to let him come on. It's the foreign national aspect. So, Jack, ask your question in Mamelodi. Jack, ask your question.
Yeah, I want to ask why us at Mamelodi we don't receive the 350, but we have our foreigners here getting money.
Okay.
So we want to know why the foreigners are getting money, 350, but us is difficult. And the foreigners are selling fruits, are selling vegetables, and they have cash on their hands. They cannot detect the cash that they are having.
Mm.
But for us South Africans who have IDs, the bank cards, we are being denied the access of our own money.
Mm.
But foreigners getting money and these things frustrate us at Mamelodi because of these guys telling us that your government give us money and we buy something and then we're going to sell it to you guys. So it's difficult for us and it's going to create havoc at Mamelodi because you don't take us serious. You say you must register, we register, we are not working, but you guys, the system. So I don't know, Hore, is it the system designed to disadvantage us as South Africans or what?
Jack, have you applied, Jack?
I've been applying, my brother, since 2020. I've never received it.
Yeah. Do you have other income, Jack, or do you have a bank account?
I do have a bank account, but I don't have any income. I don't have nothing. I live with my father. I'm unemployed. So it's frustrating us, these things. We are talking this thing at almost every day at community hall, but nothing happened.
Okay.
So tomorrow is going to cost us our lives when we are fighting with these guys because they are coming to our meetings telling us how stupid we are.
These are the foreigners now, so-called foreigners that you're
talking
about.
Yeah, so-called foreigners. So we don't want to fight with them.
Sure.
Because now we are at my...
And Jack's gone. Load shedding. Brenton, you see what load shedding does?
Yeah, I am concerned with what Jack is saying. So I think we just need to, and I hope Jack's listening on the radio, that,
sure.
the grant is not going to foreigners, the kind that he's, the foreigners, the economic migrants that he's referring to, the traders and so forth. The grant is going to the most vulnerable of foreigners, the refugees and the asylum seekers, those who have fled their countries due to various reasons. They've come here with nothing.
Mm.
They are registered. There's not the unregistered foreigners. These are the foreigners that are registered and have valid registrations with Home Affairs.
Mm.
They're also then subjected to exactly the same qualifying criteria. If they have bank accounts or they have any form of income basically the exact same criteria they are subjected to. So they're not being favored in any way over and above a South African citizen.
Sure.
Yeah.
Brenton van Vrede, thank you so much again. Thank you for your time.
And you
can see, even if you put me to a test, I might pass that test, you know, considering the SASSA regulations and what needs to go on. But I appreciate all the time when we have called, you have come on board. And, you know, whenever there's a change in the system or changes that need to be, you know, communicated, then we will knock on your door. And thanks for making yourself available all the time.
Thanks, Denzel. It's always a pleasure coming on your show. And thanks for the platform that you provide us to speak to your listeners.
Sure. That's Brenton van Vrede, SASSA's executive manager for grants, just explaining what goes on there behind the scenes. And like I said, you know, it's a proposal now, and that proposal has an input date or a date by which it will expire. The Government Gazette is out. Zulu, the minister, has proposed an update to the regulations underpinning the South African Social Security Agency payments, calling for public comments by July 29. Those public comments basically around the figure of 624 a month and not opening the door really for all other aspects. So just on another aspect, talking to what Jack had phoned in about, and it's that aspect that I also raised with him, and I talk about Brendan, the total number of non-citizens who applied is 21,207, and the majority are special permit holders from Lesotho at 15,882, followed by asylum seekers at 2,133, and special permit holders from Zimbabwe and Angola at 1613 and 1579, respectively.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.